Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
We are the principals of Groundworks Garden Design. We design, build, and maintain gardens all over New York City.
And we dig plants.
That's right. And today we're broadcasting from inside the shipping container outside Roberta's Pizza, and we're talking about containers of the gardening kind. But first, I want to mention our sponsor today, which is Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com.
Beefalicious.
That's right. Good. Now, this week, someone stopped to admire my small front garden, which right now is filled with green and white tulips, a red camellia, and a fragrant cherry tree, which is in bloom right outside my bedroom window. And I have to say that it looks pretty good.
It looks really good.
So this was a woman with her small boy, and we got to talking about her wish for just a small patch of earth to grow things. She said she didn't want a lot of space, but something about my garden size, about 100 square feet. She said that she made it a point to stop by all the time on her walks because she knows she will find something new and beautiful to admire. Now, every day, Alice and I make so many gardens for other people to enjoy that I don't give my garden nearly the attention that it needs and deserves. But I got to thinking about my garden and about, you know, even everyone's small private space and how it can have a profound effect on like some total stranger who pauses there on their way and is inspired by the beauty. But let's face it, most urban dwellers don't have the luxury of outdoor space with which to explore their garden fantasies. Folly, anyone?
Yeah.
Pagoda? Or even enough space to grow a few flowers for summer pleasure. And that's where container gardening comes in. And even if you're surrounded by concrete, you can grow something in a pot.
Yeah, I have a huge container garden in front of my building in Brooklyn, and it's become kind of a destination for neighbors on the street. And actually, because we did it, now other neighbors have replicated the same sense of container gardening. And all down the street now, it's a much, much, much greener street than it used to be.
And when Alice says containers, she's talking about large containers. It really doesn't look like just a bunch of pots. It's an environment entirely.
It's a room, actually, like an outdoor room.
Exactly. So that's what a container garden can create for you. Now, if you're lucky enough to have outdoor space and just want to add an accent or a focal point in an existing garden or even a splash of color, a container garden can also fulfill that objective. So container gardens are not just for people who don't have outdoor space. It's for everyone as part of every garden. We always include some containers in the gardens that we make.
And even one pot on a stoop makes all the difference, you know, to a building and to a daily sense of life.
Yeah, and the community, a sense of beauty. So what I love about container gardens is their flexibility. You can change them easily. You can swap out the plants seasonally without a lot of work and expense. And you can also experiment. You can try out a plant that you were kind of thinking about putting in your garden but weren't sure. It's easy. And also, that's another thing that I love is that they're very easy to deal with. Even an inexperienced gardener can succeed with a container garden. It's also easier on your back and on your body, you know, physically. If you don't have a lot of strength, or for older people who can't, you know, till the soil and can't, you know, do the heavy work of garden preparation, a container garden's simple. You're bringing in fresh new soil, and the plants usually succeed. You usually have little or no weeding to do, and there's much fewer insect problems than there are in the ground. What I also love about them is their variety. I mean, we don't all have enough space to fulfill all of our garden wishes, as I said before. We all can't have an English border or, you know, a big pond garden. So if you want to try out making a bog garden or a water garden or some kind of mini alpine environment or some tropical exuberance, you can do it on a small scale with great effect and with minimal expense with a potted garden. So the way I think about potted gardens is they're the seasonal trendy fashion accessories. And the rest of the garden are the classic pieces that you wear year after year.
Nice so, analogy.
Yeah. You spend more money on the classics, but you can have fun with the trendy seasonal stuff and not have to pay a lot to look up to date.
Like shopping at Ricky's.
Right. Or Forever 21.
Yeah. No. For those of us that are 40, we know what that means.
We can still shop there.
We can.
Just choosing the right size is important. Anyway, now, of course, growing things in pots is not a new idea. And of course, Alice and I always have to put in a bit of history on every show. The ancient hanging gardens of Babylon were containerized.
And we're not talking about Babylon, New York, Long Island.
No, that's right. The ancient Greeks and the Romans had potted gardens. And these, of course, in turn inspired the gardens of the Renaissance with their potted orangeries and their pots of other exotic things that they...
Lemons.
Yeah, they nurtured along. Now, in the 21st century, we continue the tradition, and our choices of container and materials is wider than ever. We don't have to lug around super heavy, terracotta pots, because we have space age materials mm-hmm. to work with, like fiberglass that they
resin.
Make. Exactly. So I want to just say a few words about the container in container gardening. And this is what I think makes it very special. With container gardening, there's an opportunity to achieve a kind of unity of sculpture and horticulture. And what I mean is that the right container combined with the correct choice of plant material achieves a kind of like sublime balance, like the right frame for a painting. You know when it is just right. So I want to give you all some advice on how to choose a container. You have to consider style, proportion, materials, size, and composition. They're all things to consider together. And of course, the context. You know, a pair of like classic iron urns are lovely with like two agaves and nothing else in them all summer. Like rustic maple sap buckets are great with cosmos or other easy summer flowers for a more casual look or garden. So first you have to think about what you might like to grow and then choose a container to suit. Or alternatively, but you know, of course, also correct, find a great container and then select a suitable plant for the conditions. Both ways work really well.
Chicken and an egg.
Yeah. Now, sometimes I've fallen in love with a container so much that I've even enjoyed it empty as a focal point in the garden until I found, you know, just the right plant companion for it.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to just sit with the container and really think about what your garden needs, what your space needs, and what that container commands, design-wise and shape-wise.
And you might have to shuffle it around in places mm-hmm. in the garden to see where it really works. So I want to give you just a few loose rules to guide you in the selection. You want to choose materials and shapes that you love and that you will, and then you'll find a world of plant choices that will fill those empty pots. Make sure that your containers are large enough to make an impact and support the plant. They have to be big enough. If you want a nice size tree, you need a good size container. Mm-hmm. It's always generally better to have fewer, larger, more dramatic pieces than lots of little pots that don't make much of a statement. And I think a lot of people make that mistake. They go and they buy lots of cute little pots and line them up. And then it just looks like...
It looks like little toy soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, with little plants one by one, all in a line.
Yeah.
And it doesn't read well as a volume.
No. And it doesn't really... Like we had said with Alice's garden, her garden doesn't look like a collection of pots. It looks like a garden first that happens to be containerized. Now, of course, the pots don't all have to match unless, of course, it's obvious. You have two pillars and you have to anchor an entrance or a doorway to a garden or to your home. Of course, you should have matching containers mm-hmm. in that sense. But while you don't want to match them, the containers, they have to relate in some way to one another, either in material, in color, or in shape in some way. Or you're going to kind of have a junk show.
It's going to look like a junk show. A bad junk show.
Yeah. And they also have to suit the context or the site. For example, if you have a casual cottage garden, You might use simple shapes and rougher materials like ironstone or glazed pottery. There's a lot of amazing choices out there nowadays. Like I had mentioned, fiberglass. There's lots of recycled choices. And there's many sources online. Many, many people have gotten into the outdoor room business. Mm-hmm. Many retailers and catalogs. To extend their reach to their customer, because mm-hmm. anybody that has even a little bit of outdoor space. And Alice and I are fond of recycling containers. I mean, you can use anything. You can use clay chimney flues for cool succulent gardens.
Tires,
that classic,
you
know,
always that inside vernacular. Yeah.
I'm sure it's all over Williamsburg.
And when they're painted white, like down south, they use them as kind of fences. They cut them in half.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And
plant
them up.
I think that that's, you know, it has
it's sweet.
It has to, you know, like I said, there's some rules, but, you know, it has to suit your personality as well.
And the setting, the landscape.
Yeah. Now, if you have, you know, a formal evergreen hedge or a really formal garden, and you know, that needs some kind of punctuation, you might want to consider like a cast iron urn. That might be, you know, more suitable. So, you know, these rules are simply guidelines.
It should reflect the architecture.
Yeah. But Alice and I break the rules all the time, too. Like we said, sometimes we see something fantastic, you know, like a big, you know, ram's head blue, you know, urn.
Glazed.
And it looks really amazing. And then we get it and we find the right place for it, because we know that good style, like something that has just good looks, will find a place, mm-hmm. you know, in somebody's garden. And plants, what I find is plants rarely make a container look bad. You know, you can take that same container and arrange it like five different ways and it would all be correct as long as you consider the scale, proportions,
And differing heights. I think that's, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I'm saying, you know, you can break the rules. There are times when they can be successfully broken. Go with your instinct. If you really love it, you can usually make it work in some context within your garden, because if you liked it, that means it kind of suited your style generally. Mm-hmm. And your garden probably reflects your general style and your general, you know, sense of aesthetics. So we're going to take a little break now. We're going to listen to some appropriate music, Potted Plant by Cass Spells. And when we come back, Alice is going to talk in more depth about specific kinds of containers and
design.
And design. Wish I could be hammered to watch them in your keyhole in your living room. Never listen to the chatter.
Welcome back to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We're talking about container gardens for today. And as Carmen was speaking earlier, the history of container gardens is really, really old. Containers were illustrated on the carved scenes of limestone walls 3,500 years ago, which dates back to Queen Hatshepsut. Hatshepsut. Obviously, I'm not Egyptian. Where frankincense trees were illustrated in pots. We also talked about the hanging gardens of Babylon. And these were really rooftop gardens that were so large in that time that two chariots could pass on the paths. Now, this is on a rooftop. So that is an amazing container garden.
Did they have a landscape architect on the job to make sure they could, you know,
yeah,
could, yeah, I, could I hold would, that weight?
That structural engineer, where's that guy now, right?
I'm sure he figured it out.
And of course, the ancient Romans grew shrubs and vines and roses and trees in containers for balconies and window ledges and rooftops, as portrayed in many of the fresco paintings. So as modern city dwellers without space, our containers become our Babylon gardens. So suburbanites use containers as the Romans did, mostly to highlight and to draw attention to a special plant within the garden bed, which gives seasonal interest to dull garden beds as perennials wax and wane through the year. So this is a way to surround yourself with plants, containers. Every nook and cranny can be stuffed with plants. They can hang, they can be potted, they can climb, they can trapeze, so that every space can be a reflection of some sort of greenery.
And whenever you put something in a container, of course, it draws the person's eye to it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It becomes just a beacon.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really great. And if you've made like a gardening mistake and, you know, like a patch of your border has died in the middle of the season, it's an easy way to just fill it without having to, you know, it gives you time to think about what you want to put in there,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. So how do you do it? And how do you actually be successful? Because we've all seen really gorgeous containers and window boxes. And how does that come to be? Is that like a trained horticulturist? Did that person just get lucky? Well, there's a lot of factors. And I think the most important factor in a container garden is drainage. Drainage, drainage, drainage. Because that's going to be the number one element that affects the success of your plant, ultimately, because we really want the plants to be the showman here, not the container. However, they can complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that can hold soil can actually serve as a home for plants. You just want to make sure that the drainage is thought about, because that will probably be, as I said, the extremely successful factor in the survivability of your plant. So what we use to provide drainage is gravel, or we also use a non-biodegradable packing peanut so we don't create too much weight for that planter. And we put a few inches of either this gravel or these packing peanuts on the bottom of the container. Then on top of that, we put a piece of filter fabric on top of this drainage material so that the gravel doesn't mix into the soil. Generally, and depending upon the type of plant that's chosen for the container, you'll want a well-draining, lightweight soil, potting soil, and we add a bit of compost for organic matter. We mix this up like a cake batter so that it's loose and aerated.
Oh, I just want to mention, Alice, that we've come up with our own brand of soil.
Yes, Brooklyn Blend.
Specifically for urban gardeners. You'll be able to find it shortly at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden Shop.
And at the flea market.
And the flea market in Brooklyn. So
and it's via our website.
Yes, exactly.
So next becomes the plant choice and then the resulting planter choice. So typically favored by Victorian gardeners was the strawberry jar. I think everybody's seen this. These are these planters, generally terracotta, and they have these kind of bulbous pocket planters along the sides for strawberry cultivation. Now, this is particular to strawberries because it is kind of a vertical growing method that keeps the beds free of particular to strawberries, they're kind of traveling stems. So in this case, the strawberry jar, its form follows the function because these pockets allow for the stems to be grown in these pockets so that you get this kind of vertical trailing
and
habit.
The berries stay clean,
yes,
rather than on the ground. Strawberries,
right,
take up a lot of space when you put them in the garden and they do spread vigorously.
So this is a way of getting a great yield because you're kind of working up rather than out, and then these pockets allow for the spreading trailing part of it to root themselves. So but these pots demand a kind of systematic approach to planting. So it's best to plant this type of planter from the ground up. So we suggest standing the empty container up, we suggest using a tube, like a paper towel tube, in the center of the container, and begin with your drainage layer on the bottom and fill it with soil, gravel, a little charcoal for filtration, and plants moving upwards so that you're kind of working in these layers. And the reason you use this tube is because through the center of the pot is because it keeps the center soil drainage non-damp because of this gravel and this charcoal, so that fungal disease does not start from the center of the pot and work outwards.
So the tube remains in the planter.
You could take it out because, but you can also leave it in if it's, that's why I like the paper tube. And be sure to gently tap this entire planter after it's been planted to settle all the soil and the roots. Now, next are glazed pots, which are most typical in gardens, and these date back to Persia and Chinese gardens. These are great for moisture-loving plants, as the glaze acts kind of as a sealer to evaporation and transpiration of air. These pots make excellent, excellent water gardens, papyrus and water lilies and water lettuces and fish. You just have to remember to empty them in the winter where temperatures fall below freezing, as cracking can occur and therefore damage to plant roots if you are keeping soil in them instead of as a water garden. I'll talk more about water gardens in a few minutes.
Yeah, you can also keep them covered. If you don't want to empty them, if it's a big pot,
right,
you can cover it with a waterproof tarp or something like that, as long as water doesn't go in.
You just want to try and stop that freezing and heaving, because that will surely crack your pot. So another kind of container is a cache pot or a jardiniere. These are fashionable in the 19th century, and they're glazed, and they were created to make ease of springtime cleaning from salts that result from fertilizers. So mostly these lack drainage holes, and they're kind of more decorative. I think we've all seen them. They kind of have little short feet, and they're rectangular in their shape. And you can also use them for moisture-loving plants because the drainage doesn't exist in them. And we usually use these as focal points. They're kind of short and decorative. They're very elegant. And one of my favorites are jardinettes, as opposed to jardiniere. And jardinettes are these small pots that resemble tree stumps. They're kind of moss-covered, and they're fantastical. And these look great with ferns or early spring bulbs. Again, they're very, very decorative. And again, they're also small, so they're not suited to big splashes of color or large plant material, but a rather subtle focal point for kind of a lackluster garden.
And you can find these kinds of things in antique shops or flea markets. Mm-hmm. The Brooklyn Flea Market has some garden elements. I'm sure this spring they're going to have more.
Yeah.
They have quite a few antique dealers that will especially have cache-pots and jardinières.
Yeah, and a lot of these actually are very desirable as antique collectibles. So keep your eye out for the makers. You know, this kind of becomes big business collecting these pots. And then there's troughs. And these are great for alpine and rock gardening type plantings, as drainage needs to seep through a gravelly and rocky environment. Troughs can also be used for low plantings, like a moss garden or an herb garden, where deep-rooted plants are not necessary. So they're more for shallow-rooted plants. These work great for cactus and succulent gardens, as the architecture of the plant doesn't compete with the planter. These planters look best with just a few differing plants rather than stuffing it with crazy combinations.
And I want to just add, Alice, that great examples of this can be found at Wave Hill in the Bronx. They have an excellent alpine garden that you can go and visit for inspiration.
Yeah, and a lot of these troughs are actually available in the marketplace, and it's called Hyper Tufa, which are these very lightweight kind of trough containers. And then there's baskets. Now, this is such a 1980s design theme, the basket, but it actually dates back to very early gardening days, as in harvesting vegetables and herbs and carrying your bounty through the fields. Or again, it's bad 1980s overuse.
Just go to Martha Stewart's first book, first cookbook. It's the entire cover is filled with baskets in her kitchen.
Now, my opinion aside, these do make great decorative containers as the color is natural and they do offer very interesting textures which can offset the flowers and the foliage color. It's best to line these baskets with some sort of plastic barrier or some sort of sheet moss, because you want to avoid too much water getting on the rattan or the basket, because that's where mold and bacteria build up. And Carmen was speaking earlier about junk show. You want to really make sure that your pots are clean. So at the end of the season, you really want to clean this out, throw away the plastic liner, and store it in a cool, well-aerated place.
There's nothing more hideous than a plant left over to die in its poor, sad container over the winter.
Rotting basket.
Black. Black.
Slimy.
Slimy plant.
No.
You know, that someone forgot.
Yeah. So let's stick with the glazed pots and the big fiberglass resin pots that are clean and you can control the environment. And then there's window boxes. These look
best. How can we forget?
These, I think, in my opinion, look best when they relate stylistically to the architecture of the building that they are hung on. So whether it's rustic or formal or shaker or arts and crafts or traditional, it should be a minimum of 8 inches high and 10 inches wide. So plant choice is important here, as perennials and evergreens will need lots of room and annuals will need smaller room comparatively. So think about what you want to put in your window box and then size accordingly. Make sure that the box sits squarely on the windowsill or that it can be anchored into the window frame, because you don't want it to fall down into the street or into the garden bed below. You want to make sure that the hardware is strong enough, like the eye hooks and the wire, and never, ever, ever underestimate the weight of wet soil.
It's very true. When we had that terrible, storm in March, the rainstorm, I had a pot, one of my favorite pots, on my steps, and I would sit with a pretty big evergreen in it, and I would say it weighed probably 300 pounds with the soil and everything wet, and the wind knocked it over and broke it into a million pieces.
Right.
So you can't assume that because it's filled with soil that it's heavy enough to withstand wind forces.
Right. And also with window boxes and wood in particular, remember that if it doesn't have some sort of rubber liner, it's going to slowly rot, which is going to compromise the structure and the stability of that container. So you have to keep an eye on that, because that's going to affect your plants and your safety, perhaps. And then there's hanging baskets and gardens. And again, the same rules apply to the window box construction. You want eye hooks and wire and weights to be attended to. Wet baskets and soil can pull and stress wood. So, be concerned about the placement of the hanging basket. Make sure it's anchored into dry wood or metal so that plantings don't, come crashing down onto your beautiful table that's underneath or your fancy paving.
Or the head of the tallest person in the family. Consider consider the height of the tallest person and, hang it accordingly. Also, plants are going to hang down lower. So
yeah,
you don't want to hang it too low because it's guaranteed for someone to not see it and hit themselves.
Exactly. Especially and at night, too. You might want to think about lighting them. Plantings in these type of hanging baskets look really gorgeous as they kind of spill over the basket rim. This adds color and texture to the dullest places, and that's why these hanging baskets can really brighten up a very dull, boring corner. And plant selection must replicate the placement of the container, whether it's shade plants or sun-loving plants. You'll want 3 design items per container. You want some sort of tall and spiky height. Then you want some kind of long and trailing pendular growth to hang over the sides. And then you want kind of mid-height plants. You'll also need to think about the ease of watering and maintaining these hanging gardens, make sure you can actually get to them for pruning and deadheading and clipping and watering. You want to remember and think about what's planted underneath these baskets or these window boxes. Is your eating table there? And will the water and soil spill out as you water? Do you have beautiful paving that could be stained from the soil and fertilizer salts? So I'm just saying, the placement of the container is just as important as the plantings.
And these tend to dry out a little bit more than planters put right on the ground.
Right.
So you have to really watch the water.
Because they're in the air and exactly. The wind dries them out. So let's talk about water gardens.
My favorite.
Big subject, but some brief notes and some thoughts. The key to success here, I think, is the size of the container in accommodating the aquatic plants. Try and find scaled down smaller varieties of the plants if you can, and we'll list a few great sources that are online and in the tri-state area for these specialized plants. So containers can be whiskey barrels, but with a whiskey barrel, make sure that it's a truly waterproofed whiskey barrel. It can take the wood slats a long time to absorb enough water to actually make them watertight. And also charcoal residue can be present in these wood slats, which can taint the water. Garden centers offer these prefabbed liners, but sometimes they don't look so great, and they are kind of hard to camouflage with plants. We really stress the use of glazed containers for water gardens. They work great and they're easily available. Or a nice big resin fiberglass bowl can be really gorgeous too. Soil in aquatic gardens must be very high in organic matter, and this can be difficult to achieve in small containers. Typically, soils of aquatic plants are clay and sand-based, and contain very little organic matter. So what we suggest is use a formulated fertilizer tablet, which can be available at water garden nurseries where you purchase the plants. That's how the plants can get the nutrients.
And a lot of water garden nurseries, I just want to say, are a lot of nurseries are online. You can find a lot of choices. And the plants, while they're pretty easy to ship, and they grow pretty fast within a season.
And they come in these kind of plastic pots. And what you do is you simply submerge this plastic pot into your water trough or into your resin or fiberglass planter. So you just set these plants directly in their grow pot right into the water. And the maintenance of these plants is just as it would be with ground planted plants. They do need deadheading. They need organic pest control. You might want to use smaller tools for this environment because it's kind of a miniaturized version. You might want to use spoons and forks versus trowels and shovels, that sort of thing. Scissors versus clippers, you know. A rule of thumb in the selection of plants for your container, and you need to is that you need to plant like plants together. So water requirements are important in choosing plants for your container. Shade things planted with other shade things. Sun-loving plants with other sun-loving plants so that you're not drowning out the shade plant while you're trying to water the sun-loving plant. That's a very important rule to container gardens. You want to plant like plants together.
Yeah, plants that have similar needs is what Alice is saying. You know, so that they don't, you're not overwatering or underwatering.
And the way I do this is I think about things that go geographically together, things from the same sort of environment. That's kind of a rule, general, easy rule of thumb. So some great combinations for both plant combinations for both water gardens and above ground containers, to name a few. Let's start with water gardens. Lotus, miniature water lilies, and water clover. We also love miniature cattails and rushes for height in this water garden.
And papyrus is great. It's a tropical here in this zone, but it's really easy to grow.
Mm-hmm. So again, we want that spiky, we want that trailing, and then we want the mid-height. So it's basically three design elements per container. So for cactus and succulent gardens, a combination that we love is echeveria, aloe, and low-growing sedums. So you get the height and the spikiness from the aloe. You get the mid-range height and that fat succulent look from the echeveria and the trailing beauty from the low-growing sedums. Shrubs and perennials can work great in pots too. The shrub will act naturally as the tall, spiky element, and we like to underplant with a ground cover or some sort of annual to complement the shade and the style of that shrub. So, for instance, a red twig dogwood looks really great with Hakanakloa, which is that yellow grass-like ground cover, and it really complements the yellow variegated edging of the dogwood shrub. We also like rhododendron with ferns. And again, that's what I meant by like plants together. These are both shade plants, and they like to be kind of moist in the same arena. It's, you know, the rhododendron is that big, soft, large leaf, and it's planted with the spiky softness of ferns. Both are natives, and they like low light. So for annuals, a combination that we especially like is red fountain grass with an underplanting of black mondo grass and pink trailing verbena or calibacoa, which is a mini petunia.
I love that plant. That's a great indispensable annual.
It just blooms and blooms and blooms all and, summer long.
Yeah, and it's basically just a mini petunia. Rather than the big blooms of the petunias that get beaten up by the wind and get
eaten.
And
they need to be deadheaded constantly.
Yeah, this calibacoa, you don't have to remove the spent blooms. They just go on and on, literally from May until November.
Right. So, of course, we could go on and on and on and talk about all different kinds of plants, but we want you, the gardener, to plant your own combinations and containers and send us images of your containers this spring and summer, and we'll post a few on our Facebook fan page. So, in closing, today's brief and quick, dirty discussion of container gardens, think about form and function for success. With container gardening, remember, it's a very unique environment. It's one that is forced into being and designed. Container gardening is really man's industrialized temperament meeting naturalistic forms.
That's very deep, Alice.
It is. It is. And remember, too, that everyone smiles when they see a potted container, if it's done right. So you've been listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be at the Brooklyn Flea in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, the next two Saturdays, April 24th and May 1st, with some great teak containers and plants for creating amazing window boxes. We are also going to showcase some green roof trays, Live Roof, which is the trade name, which is the ultimate and cutting edge container gardening.
And you can buy them there and
yes.
order them.
And we look forward to meeting you and talking more about plants. So come down, hang out with us, and say hi. Today's show was produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. Our sponsor today is Hearst Ranch. And a big thanks to Roberta's Pizza for hosting these two repurposed shipping containers and radio studio at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Happy gardening.
See you in the garden.